The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
And good morning, everybody. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter on this Tuesday, August 25th. Nick Christensen over across from me getting ready to go. We'll be taking phone calls. Got a lot going on the show this morning, Nick.
Yeah, we'll start here in a few minutes with an update from Henry Kriegel for Americans for Prosperity. And then when he's done, we'll get another update from Brian Massard from Reminis Angus Ranch. He'll be on from like 8:20 to 8:30. And then a special guest that you scheduled from 8:30 to 9 during that half hour.
Yeah, we'll have Dr. Jeremiah Shin in. Jeremiah's just taken over here about 50-some days ago, low 50. I think it's about 54 days ago. New in the job, the 20th president of the University of Montana. And we'll be talking with him about what his philosophy is. He had a very interesting State of the University speech the other day on Friday, and I've heard several of these. But unlike some past presidents who sort of leaned into spreadsheets and budgets and those kind of things, he was talking more about the philosophy and where he challenges the school, saying, hey, we need to prove that the value of a higher education, and we're already making a difference here. And it was a real Montana-centric speech. I really liked it. So I'm looking forward to talking with him.
Yeah, no, that'll be great. And then from 9 to 10, we're going to have open phones. So whatever our callers want to talk about and bring up, and we obviously have a couple things that we'll bring up to spark some conversation, but yeah, it'll be a full show today.
The thing, too, we're watching, we won't talk about this during the show, but I think we need to address it right off, is just a couple of terrible tragedies. We talked about that on the news this last hour. The situation over in Billings just shows you what the hazardous situations first responders can run into. And I've been on many of these types of scenes before, and it just is terrible. So they get a call initially. This is on Sunday evening about 6 o'clock to go over onto the west side, the west end out there, from a report of a possible shooting and family disturbance. The officer rolls up on the scene, and literally, so they're still trying to assess what is going on here, because shots fired, obviously, you know, from, you know, your background, your family's background, it's a very volatile situation. And then within 3 minutes of that first officer arriving, the house goes up in flames and becomes fully involved. And yesterday at the press conference, we still don't know a lot as to what happened. We know that there was one man that was inside from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. They took him over to the hospital. He passes away later. We know there's multiple victims, but they've not said how many. We do know there's adults and children involved. So just a terrible tragedy over there that they're trying to sort through. And they'll do another press conference, I think, set for tomorrow. So we may learn more about what's happened. They say they know the identities of the victims, but just terrible. And then on top of that, out in Oregon, kind of a similar case out in Forest Grove, which I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a very beautiful little place down there in the northern Willamette Valley. Just a nice, reminds me a lot of a larger version of some of our towns, like Hamilton, for example. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. And they get a call to go out to a fire in the rural area. And they get out there to check it out. And sure enough, they find a fire, multiple victims, 5 victims in all. Apparently still some kind of a family disturbance. Something happened. These people died in the fire. I think there were adults, but there may have been children as well. A bunch of pets died. So they're trying to find this guy. And then they found him up in Enumclaw, up in western Washington. And he had killed himself in the car, the suspect they were looking for. So just terrible when these kind of things happen. I mean, it's very devastating for a community to try to sort through that. And, of course, really hard on first responders. I know the firefighters in Billings, we've heard that, you know, they're kind of helpless. What do you do? We can't go in to fight this fire to save victims. We don't know what's going on.
Right.
And it just escalates within a matter of minutes. And so really, really terrible. And we're wishing the best to everybody over there involved in that case and that investigation.
Yeah, terrible. Well, yeah, we got Henry Kriegel here. I believe he's calling now. I'll go get
that. All right, get that call, and we'll get going. And like I say, we'll get Dennis Bragg filling in this morning for Peter Christian. And we want to welcome all of you to TalkBack. So glad to have all of you on board with us here on this Tuesday, right here on the Montana Talks Network.
If your business or...
Dennis Prague with the updated weather. A combination of patchy smoke and sunny skies the next couple of days with highs in the mid to upper 80s. Mornings have been running colder than the forecast, dropping into the 40s, even the low 30s Monday morning. And if that continues, it'll stunt the afternoon heating. We are watching for a push of monsoonal moisture again, especially Wednesday and Thursday afternoon and evening. A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Sun should last into Friday, but we are seeing a threat of rain and cooler conditions for the upcoming weekend.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Dennis. I'm here in sunny Orlando, Florida. Policy Network Convention. And getting inspired by seeing all the great things that are happening on the freedom movement nationwide.
Oh, that's fun. That's a good opportunity. What are some of the things that are sort of popping up? You finished the tour here a few days ago. What's kind of on your to-do list here as we go into the month of September especially?
Well, you know, we're at a very unique inflection moment here in the country and in the state of Montana, and that is there are two visions for America. One vision holds that government knows best and that government can provide us. They're almost like our quartermaster providing us provisions because that's what some people think needs to happen. We need them to provide health care, housing, food, government-run grocery stores, a one-size-fits-all, a government-run health care system. That's one vision. Government as the quartermaster, government as the bestower of our rights. The other vision is the belief in the ability of the individual to create, to innovate, and to be productive, that the individual was endowed with the Creator with certain inalienable rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is what we're celebrating this year as America's 250th anniversary, and that when government gets out of the way, ordinary individuals can do extraordinary things. That's what we believe in Americans for Prosperity. That's what we fight for in the state legislature, in Washington, D.C., in every chapter we have across this great nation of ours. We believe in the individual's capability to create and to innovate and to offer value to its fellow citizens. And that's what we're fighting for, and that's what we talked about on the tour. And that's what we're doing.
I'm curious, as you get together with your colleagues from around the country, this country is a pretty diverse, that's really our strength, I think. But do we have commonalities with some of these places? You're in Florida, for example. Or are you finding our issues maybe don't match up with others, or do they more than you expect?
Well, there's some big issues that are being discussed here. Of course, chief among them are educational freedom. There's research that has proven what we thought all along, that when there is education freedom and there's innovation in private and access to private education, that public schools do better when there's competition. They're required to in order to retain their students. There's statistics that validate that. There's lots of concern about data centers and AI and how to power them, and what their role is in our economy, in our communities. Of course, communities need to be heard and need to have their concerns expressed and addressed.
I know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. We're blessed in Montana with vast energy resources. And we talked about this on the tour. We toured the Yellowstone generating power station run by Northwestern Energy and the liquefied natural gas plant that is supposed to augment wind and solar, but it's the other way around. I mean, they produce and provide most of the energy in that region, and wind and solar provide nominal amounts. But in any case, we're blessed with the energy in Montana. We're blessed with the cleanest coal in the country. We're blessed with hydro. We're blessed with, some of the Bakken on our side of the state. And we have the technology with small nuclear reactors. Now our Constitution has been amended to allow for it. And we need to generate the energy that will lower costs for all Montana families and help us innovate and to create here in the state, because data centers and the like are here.
We got a couple.
We have to embrace that technology.
A couple of minutes left. I do want to ask you: have you run into anybody says that's jealous of us for having all of these different capabilities, and say, "Well, you guys should be having the data centers. You've got all these options," or are they hitting where we're landing on that data center question, the use of energy?
I think lots of states are having to grapple with it. There's lots of lack of understanding. There's certain. Anything that's new and innovative will run into resistance. The concerns are legitimate. They need to be addressed. It's being discussed here at this conference. There are some very capable organizations and individuals here addressing those issues. And I'm confident, again, in the ability of Americans and Montanans to provide the resources necessary for our growth and our expansion. We've done it before in the past. This is just a new era, and it will happen. I'm confident of it. I'm talking in generalities due to lack of time.
Yeah, that's...
We'll get into it in greater detail when we have more.
That's what I was going to ask you, too, if people want to find out more about some of these new initiatives, especially with the legislative session coming up. What's the best way they can get involved in AFP and sort of track or even provide some input on this?
Sure. I would say log on to BigSkyBlueprint.com. BigSkyBlueprint.com. You will see our legislative agenda there. And if you scroll down where it says take action or get involved, just click on that and sign up for our newsletters. You'll find out about events happening in your area. As we mentioned last week, we were in Laurel, Montana. We were also in East Helena, and we toured a bunch of power generating stations out there and mines out there in the Libby area. We had lots of legislators join us, and leaders around the state joined us. Get involved, take action, join us at Americans for Prosperity. Log on to BigSkyBlueprint.com.
All right. Well, Henry, we always appreciate your visits and your hard work, and you have safe travels, and we'll see you when you get back in state here shortly.
I appreciate that, Dennis. Have a great rest of your show and rest of your week.
All right. Thanks very much. Henry Krieger from Americans for Prosperity. It is going to be an interesting session, I think. They want to work on things like right to work, healthcare access, obviously the data center issue. I think taxes are going to be the big topic, really, for this session. And can we come up, the flat tax and all these other discussions. It's going to be interesting to see where we end up. Looking forward to that upcoming legislative session. All right, looking forward to more here as we go through Talk Back. Got some great guests coming up, so stay with us. We're Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network.
Hey, if you're waking...
And we're back with Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian this morning. And we've got one of our favorite guests on, Brian Massard, who, of course, is out there with Reminisce Angus and the Big Ranch and everything. Brian, how you doing this morning? Good to have you on with us again on Talk Back.
I'm doing very good. Glad to be on with you guys. Appreciate the opportunity.
We were talking during the break, and we should maybe start with this about drought, because I know we constantly hear drought. It seems like every year I'm writing those stories and everything. But how are we doing on the producer side of things? Do we manage to get just enough moisture sort of squeak through here, or just what?
We sure have down in southwestern Montana. I've talked to friends all across the state, north, south, east, west, and most of it, I won't say all of it, but most of it has gotten just enough to get through. I know if we wouldn't have got the rain, typically we don't get rain down here in July and August. Somewhere in the summer, it's 60 days with nothing. And we lucked out, and somewhere you were in a spot that would get a tenth of an inch or 1,500 or something. It was just enough to keep the cows out. And if we'd had our usual 60-day no rain period without any snowpack last fall, there'd be thousands of cattle displaced and already gone to markets or shipped out of state. And there's really nowhere to ship out of state because it's a big, big area. There's a dozen states. So there's not anybody accepting. They don't have their doors wide open for cows to come in.
And I know, especially, I know when we were going into this with fire season, especially, they were talking about that stronger than usual push of monsoonal moisture. So we've got just enough to sort of squeak by. And I know our hearts break when we look at what's going on with the ranching community out in eastern Oregon, eastern Washington. It's been a tough year here in the Northwest.
It has. And, you know, the fire season is always frustrating for those of us on the ground and counties and states because when it hits on federal land, especially the Forest Service, they sit and they monitor it on purpose because they don't trigger millions and millions of dollars of federal aid to watch these fires burn until it gets out of control. And then they get a gob of money, and Simplot makes a killing because they make the fire retardant, and Boeing is making more planes. And you have these very capable loggers and people with equipment that could go up and maintain a healthy forest. They could use those same dollars in a positive way, maintain a healthy forest, keep those utility roads open, keep the trails open for the public, keep the habitat good for all the wildlife and all the habitat we need up there, but they refuse to do it. And that's frustrating for us when you, like down here, the Sand Creek fire, the Bobcat Lake fire, that was reported the day it happened when it was one little plume. And the Forest Service, typical, as they usually do in this region, is they monitor it. And then once it got out of control and spread out over 20 miles, then they call in the help, and then they have all the community show up and say, hey, we have no resources to fight these fires when it's way out of control. It would have taken one helicopter or one plane. They could take the money they waste in these camps, these fire camps. Everybody's sitting around the edge 20 miles from the fire watching it burn and monitoring it. Take that money and use it to keep it out. You could have a helicopter and a plane for every county in Montana for what they waste watching it burn. And look at the price of housing. All that material's gone. Everybody loves the trees. But we'll let them burn. It's just amazing.
It's hard. I want to talk briefly in our time about meat prices, but also about this idea of the imports coming in. What's kind of your take on this with the president's decision to bring in these Brazilian imports? How are you kind of looking at this situation?
He's a funny one to figure out. I think the problem most people have with President Trump, and especially a lot of people that voted for him, is he talks at people, talks down to people, and he said it last fall in October that the ranchers are nothing without him. And then this is just a midterm move for him. It's not a dramatic amount of meat. Some people may think it's a dramatic amount of meat. Ranches, it does. The futures market, all the traders, all the money traders are going to make money on it because they'll push the market down and they'll make that thing yo-yo. And that's who's going to make the money off of this decision. It's not going to affect prices. And the second thing it's not going to do is, the RCAF group always calls out and says the Packers are going to make the money off all this. It's most of this meat's all going to go to huge grocery stores like Costco, Walmart, Kroger's, Winco. It'll go through all your fast food places, and those people are in to make money. And so they're not going to give up any money, and nobody brings them up all the amount of money the retailers make. And so it'll have a little effect, but it's, again, rather than open that border up and let 300,000 metric tons come in when you have a declining cow herd and a big drought coming in, how about you stop printing money? How about you? All the inflation of our equipment and our fuel and our fertilizer is all from going to war, printing money. Democrats and Republicans love war. They love printing money. They love to go back when they're campaigning and saying, hey, I got $6 million for this pet project. And then they get voted for. They just keep spending more money. So why don't we stop printing money? Because the only people that wins when you print money are those people on the board at the Federal Reserve. That's a fake entity. The rest of us lose. The rest of us pay. And nobody in the Senate or the Congress or any administration I've seen except for JFK was about the last one, and you saw what happened to him, will stand up against these people. And that's what costs ranchers money. Cow prices are super high right now, but you know, a new truck is $80,000. New tractors are $150,000. Interest is still through the roof. We've got folks making as much money as they've ever made on their cattle. They can't keep any extra to rebuild their herd. because they're lagging on interest. Lagging on replacement equipment they haven't in 15 years.
It's a tough thing. Well, Brian, we always appreciate your insights as to what's going on the ranch there, and we certainly wish you the best at the end of the season here and getting ready for the winter. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, you bet. You guys have a great day.
This is Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network.
In a world of with KGRZ Sports, here's your sports update. Brought to you by Campbell Kia of Missoula. New and pre-owned vehicles at a no-pressure buying experience. Located off Expressway and online at CampbellKia.com. Here's Ace Sauerwein.
Grizzly Athletics and the University of Montana Foundation announced a new partnership to support UM students Monday, with the foundation becoming the first official jersey patch partner of Grizzly football. Instead of the typical corporate sponsors you're seeing now in college football, every Grizzly football player will wear a distinctive For Montana patch in 2026 that'll raise awareness of the foundation's newly launched For Montana Scholarship Initiative, designed to expand scholarship support for Montana resident students. Head coach Bobby Kennedy said, "This is an amazing opportunity for Grizzly Athletics to stand up for all Montana students. This is bigger than athletics. These students are our family members, friends, and neighbors." That's a look at sports. I'm Ace Sauerwein.
Dennis Prague with the updated weather. A combination of patchy smoke and sunny skies the next couple of days, with highs in the mid to upper 80s. Mornings have been running colder than the forecast, dropping into the 40s, even the low 30s Monday morning. And if that continues, it'll stunt the afternoon heating. We are watching for a push of monsoonal moisture again, especially Wednesday and Thursday afternoon and evening. A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Sun should last into Friday, but we are seeing a threat of rain and cooler conditions for the upcoming weekend.
Every weekend, Diane Beck and Becky Peterson, the Beck and Beck team at Windermere Real Estate, present Missoula Real Estate Today on News Talk KGVO. The Beck and Beck team provides years of local experience for your real estate transaction and bring you guests that provide useful information on products and services available in our community on Missoula Real Estate Today. Saturday mornings from 8 till 8:30 and replayed Sunday mornings from 10:30 till 11 on News Talk KGVO, FM 98.3 and AM 1290, and on the free KGVO mobile app.
Hi there, it's Scott from Pentatonix. So from the beginning of our journey in music, the foundation has been music education. It's so incredibly important that we continue to show kids the importance of music in our schools, in our homes, and even in the car. Music is such a powerful expression of emotion and individuality, and we are responsible for keeping the love for music alive. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
It's Montana Talks on the Montana Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. I'll get all the acronyms just right at some point. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian this morning as we go statewide. And we're very happy to have in the studios with us Dr. Jeremiah Shin, the 20th president of the University of Montana. Jeremiah, thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for
having
me.
This is fantastic. And I appreciate it because, like you said, it's only been 56 days, I guess.
That's
now, right?
Day 56 for me.
Day 56. So we sure appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to get everything rolling over there to come in and talk about the new assignment and what you look for in school. And so we'll talk about it for a few minutes here. Gave your first State of the University address the other day. And I thought that went well for you. It was pretty good. Let's talk about your background a little bit, because when you came up to appear and were the leading candidate for the job, I was impressed with the way that you brought in, you talked about what UM needed, but you also had some ideas bringing with you in that. Let's talk a little bit about your background. How'd you get into higher education and what sort of led to where you are today?
I'm from a small town in Arkansas. I was the first in my family to go to college. I went and I was a pre-med major, and because in my family, I thought you could be a doctor, a lawyer, or a teacher. That's why I thought you went to college, and that was reasonable. I was good at biology, so I went and studied that, decided along the way that I didn't want to be a doctor. But I had been involved on my campus. I was student body president in college. And so I worked with the university president. I worked with vice presidents and the dean of students, and decided, hey, I think I want to do what they do. So I went to the University of Michigan for grad school and started my career there. And so different than many people who become university presidents, I didn't come up through the academic side. I came up through the student serving side. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a student affairs and enrollment person. And so my mindset has really been about creating great student experiences, helping the whole person and being sure that they can be successful when they're on campus and, more importantly, successful when they get off of our campus. And so my career has been rooted in that. I've worked at some great universities. I've learned from some great people, and I couldn't be happier to be at the University of Montana.
I love the fact that you started at the other UM, and now you here you are at the other UM,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
University of Michigan, University of Montana. That's really cool. When you came here from Boise, I know initially when we had that first press conference, you were talking about a lot of the programs, and right away I recognize your interest in tying into students, but also the business and community side of things. How important is that to you to be able to have that working together for us in 2026?
Oh, it's absolutely important. Something you'll hear me say time and time again, we're here to serve students and we're here to serve Montana. Full stop. And so I want to be sure that there's no distance between what this state needs from the university and what we're able to deliver. And that includes, and especially our business community. I want to be sure that our business community, our industry, our local communities can turn to the University of Montana when they need a teacher, when they need a cybersecurity professional, when they need an attorney. I want to be sure that they know that this university, their flagship university in the state, is here to serve them first and foremost.
You were, I was impressed with some of the snapshots you were giving the other day of different students and what they had accomplished, not only on campus, but post-graduation as well. Do those success stories really inform where inspirationally a student can go and where the campus community can play a role in that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I highlighted student stories, and they were exceptional student stories, but they're an example of what can happen right here in Montana. I mean, there's a kid right now in Broadus or Brady or Butte or Browning that has the potential to do things that they can't even imagine. You know, I always think of it, you know, there's a kid in Montana right now that has the cure for cancer in their head. I mean, they have the capability to do it. And I want to be sure that we build the kind of university that can provide them with the resources, the tools, and support so that no matter where they come from in this state, they can do great things for the state and beyond. And so that's really what makes me want to get up early every morning is serving that purpose.
I'd never heard a president also sort of remind both educators and fellow students and everybody on the campus to welcome those new freshmen, because freshman retention, it's been going up, and we really want to continue that trend, right?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes universities can be built for us, and we forget we exist to serve our students. We want to be sure that every single student that walks onto the University of Montana campus understands that that is their home, that they are welcome there, that we want them to be successful there, and we're so glad that they're there. And so that's something that I expect of me. That's something that I expect of everyone who works on our campus, because it's hard being a first-year student. I remember going to college, being the first in my family to go. I didn't feel comfortable there. I didn't feel like I belonged there. Luckily, a few people around me showed me that I did. And so
that's the way it works. We're going to dive into some of the programs and details of what you hope to see at UM, what's already going on, as we continue with TalkBack here on the Montana Talks Network. And that's up. Was back with TalkBack. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian this morning. We've got Jeremiah Shin on, the University of Montana president. One of the things you talked about in your State of the University address the other night was this issue of questions about the value of a higher education. And I had never heard anybody at the administrative level really address that. I mean, people do it in their meetings and their conferences. But to come out and say, there are questions out there, but we also need to prove that, right, to lawmakers, parents, everybody that is involved in this process. It's a very viable question for everybody to have, right?
Absolutely. We have to acknowledge that families have questions about the value of higher education, legislators, as you say, employers, our own students. And we should be asking those same questions, too. If we are to be a public university that really serves the public, we have to understand deeply what their concerns are, what their wishes and desires are, and we have to take that to heart, and we're going to. You know, I think sometimes universities can get into this defensive posture when people question the value of higher education. So they get into this defensive posture where they are then proving their worth. I don't want us to prove our worth. I want us to demonstrate our value. Because I think we have a tremendous value. I know we have a tremendous value to our students and to the state of Montana. And so that's not a defensive place. That's an offensive place. That's a place of pride. And so we as a university are going to demonstrate our value to families, to legislators, to business leaders, to our students. And I believe that when we do that, I think the perception of higher education will change.
And you made the case of that really we almost have a matrix situation here where you even said this, that not everybody needs that four-year education, that there are, but everybody needs an education, whatever form that takes.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, the Montana economy needs it all. We need skilled trades. We need two-year degree recipients. We need four-year degree recipients. We need people with masters and PhDs. We need it all to be a viable economy. But I, again, as a university president, I acknowledge that not every student in Montana wants to, needs to, or should earn a four-year degree. But if you want to earn a four-year degree, I don't want finances to be the reason that you don't. And that goes back to what I said earlier, that kid from Broadus or Brady or Butte or Browning, there are kids there that want to do it, who have the talent to do it, who have the wherewithal and the drive to do it, and maybe they can't afford to do it. That's my concern. I don't want that to be the reason that people choose not to, at the same time acknowledging that not everybody wants to, because we need a robust workforce with different levels of training.
You mentioned that I think you said 35%, roughly a third of Montana I graduates, you know, are going to college, but you could see that going up, and that's where this For Montana Scholarship Initiative comes in, right?
That's right.
The idea of a renewable program that presents those opportunities, so financial aid is not a barrier.
Right. Well, and you know, two-thirds of Montana high school students are doing something other than enrolling in a Montana University System institution. So some of them are going to college in other states. I believe and I know they can get a great education here in Montana. And I want to be sure that we have the financial resources and wherewithal to make it attractive for them to stay here, because we want them to stay here. I want to be sure that a kid in Montana knows that they can go to school in Montana, they can own a home in Montana, raise a family in Montana. That's what we want.
You gave a number, too, that really made me take notice. We were talking about the number of, I think it's the physicians program, but they're coming in at about, nationally, about 40% acceptance. And I think you said we were about 74%, as I recall.
That's right.
How's that work, and what do you see as the success of that? That's a pretty significant jump.
Yeah, the University of Montana puts people into medical school at double the clip of the national average. That's huge. I think it's due in part to our excellent scientific education. You know, people sometimes think of the University of Montana as something other than a science school. It is a science school. We do excellent science, as is evidenced by the fact that we're putting so many of our students in medical school at the highest level. So it's excellent scientific education. It's a commitment to support those students through the process. And it's just, it's the campus culture that we create at the University of Montana that I think is helping people be successful beyond what's happening in other places. It's really something we should celebrate as a state.
I know we're at the very initial phase of this, but and I can't remember the official title, but with a physician, I want to say physician in residency program.
Physician associate.
Associate.
PA.
PA. And explain this. I mean, we have a real issue in many of our smaller Montana communities and hospitals, clinics even, where they can't find the qualified people. This seems like a really unique way to sort of address a value gap there.
Absolutely.
As well.
This is a great example of where the state of Montana has a gap, especially in rural health care. There are people, there are families that have to, you know, parents that have to take a full day off of work to take their kid to see a health care provider. There are older Montanans that have to drive hundreds of miles just for a routine visit. And we believe that by having more PAs in the state, we can actually offer more rural health care. And so we answered the call. We just admitted our first class of PAs. There's an estimate that we need about 67 PAs just to keep pace with the demand every year in the state of Montana. So we, in our first class, we have 24 that are in. 20 of those are Montanans coming from the very communities that they're going to go out and serve. And so we are starting down that path, and I hope that, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now, there are people in rural areas that are receiving quality health care that they're not receiving today.
And the idea with that, too, a lot of times they either can continue to work at that level or they may come back for more advanced training or more advanced degrees, becoming specialists.
Sure.
So it's sort of a door that opens those opportunities.
Absolutely. That is a path. And I'll say that PAs can provide health care at a high level. I mean, it's they're doing some really, really great things. And sometimes for at least the most routine medical care, that's what a community needs. They need somebody that has all of that knowledge. And, you know, these are communities that probably don't have an MD within an hour's drive.
Right. And so, sometimes they just need that first assessment to get them on to a specialist or into
exactly.
Missoula or into Billings or wherever to be able to do it. So, all right, we're going to continue. If you got a few more minutes to
absolutely.
Stick around,
I
do want to talk about, I know we have a lot of Cats fans listening today because we are statewide, but we need to talk about the overall economic impact, I think, of Grizzly athletics, but by extension, all college athletics in the state. So we'll continue here in a little bit with Jeremiah Shin, University of Montana president. You're listening to Talk Back right here on the Montana Talks Network.
TalkBackers.
Severe flooding leaves cars unsafe to drive, and some vehicles end up for sale with no indication they were in a flood. Use NICB's free online VIN check service to help ensure a car is in its promised condition. To report fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
You're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian with Jeremiah Shin, University of Montana president. So if our Cat fans listening will bear with us a minute, we're going to talk broadly about Grizzly athletics. But by extension, this also extends to MSU because sports is big here. And you gave a number the other day. I think it was $100 million. Explain what that figure sort of covers.
So Grizz athletics has an annual $100 million economic impact in this across the state.
And that's across the state.
Across the state. So Grizzly athletics activities, so people traveling to games and buying gas along the way, broadcasting, advertising, all of it together has $100 million economic impact in this state every year. And that's just Grizzly athletics.
Yeah.
So when you add other universities, that just expands. So athletics is really important for our state.
And you mentioned even in, I think, the home games, it's something like, I think BBER says it's something like $5.5 million, something like that, yeah. Per home game.
Absolutely. Every Grizz home game generates revenue for hotels, restaurants, small businesses. It's an infusion into our communities that really is hard to replicate.
And one of the things I noticed there, too, is that you have the branding aspect of it is strong for both here and MSU, isn't it? I mean, when you have that kind of success, that's where those kids, even if they're not playing football, if they're out in those smaller communities, they're saying, "Oh, I know about that. I got to be a part of that energy, right?"
Absolutely. I've been calling athletics and athletics writ large across the country. I mean, it's the front porch of a university. You know, the front porch is not the house, but it's where people first encounter the house. A lot of people come to know the University of Montana through our Grizz athletics. Now, when they step onto the front porch, we want to invite them into the front door. We want them to see the great research that we're doing. We want them to see the amazing things that our students are doing. We want them to understand the ways that we're serving Montana communities. But for a lot of people, that's how they first come to know us. And that's great. That's great.
It's a powerful combination. It really is. So I want to ask you about, when we talk about money, we've gone through kind of a rough period in higher education. A lot of federal money was pulled back last year, a lot of different changes. You mentioned the research, some of the work doing here. I've been up in the labs, and it's amazing to see the things they're working on, not just COVID, but all kinds of different really innovative things going on. Where are we at in terms of that federal support when it comes to a school, an institution like UM, for continuing those kind of programs? Any concerns, or are we kind of reaching some stability here, or just what?
Yeah, I think we're reaching a place of stability. I mean, we have great support from our congressional delegation. And we're also conducting research that matters to Montana. You know, I think about the research grants that we're receiving. We're talking about things like wildfire research and understanding, you know, the Montana landscape. And I referenced that we are a science university. We are doing science. We are contributing to potentially life-saving research in medicine. And so these are things that we're going to double down on, because we believe that if we're serving Montana, if we're doing research and service to Montana, and that's our core, I think everything else is going to be fine. So the landscape has changed, but the landscape is going to change. We want to be sure that we're building a university for 2030, not the one for 2019. And it's going to look different moving forward. That's okay. That's okay. We're going to adjust.
And the programs adjust. I think of forestry in particular. If you look at that School of Forestry and you go back even 30 years, but if you go back 100 years, 40, 50, 60 years, forestry changes. So the idea is to be able to adapt, but also train those people who are this next generation of researchers and leaders and administrators, right?
Right, that's right. And I'll say that students from across the country come to our forestry program. I mean, they recognize that what we're doing at the University of Montana is cutting edge in terms of forestry. I had an opportunity to visit the Lubric Forest that's under the University of Montana banner, and visited with our dean. And, you know, the work they're doing with controlled burns and really helping understand what it means to do forest management, I think it's going to have tremendous implications, not only in Montana, but across the country, and we need it. I mean, you know, I can see a little bit of haze out there, out through the window, and wildfire is certainly something that we've got to address, and we're doing it at UM.
When we got about a minute left here, I want to ask you just generally, top of back of the envelope here, when it looks at building, we've had a tremendous amount of construction on campus. We've still got a few things being finished. Anything on the long range planning agenda, or are we going to take a little time to sort of absorb what's already happened?
Yeah, we're actually working. Speaking of forestry, we're working toward a forestry building. We've got some. We're pulling together support from different places, and we believe that in the coming years we will have a world-class forestry building. And that matters for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which we are maxed out on our capacity for people to come in and study forestry. So we want to be sure that we've got room so that people that want to do that work can come to the UM and do it. So that's one of the things on the horizon that we're most excited about.
No plans, though. I worry with some people who may say, gee, Boise, we're not looking at blue turf.
We're going to stick with the green turf. That's a one-time thing. It's very special to my friends and colleagues in Boise, but we're going to go with green turf here in Missoula.
Yeah, I think that works out well. And then we've got great sponsorships and partnerships too with people like Montana Knife Company.
So absolutely.
We don't want to start over there. So, all right, Jeremiah Shin on with us from the University of Montana. You're listening to Talkback on the Montana Talks Network.
If views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
And we're back with TalkBack. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian this morning, and Nick is with us. Nick, do we have a call, it looks like, on the phone?
Yeah,
right?
We got Jeff on the line.
All right, let's get Jeff on the phone here. We've got Jeremiah Shin in with us, the University of Montana president. Jeff, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing better than I deserve. Thanks.
Pretty good. What's your question?
Dr. Shin, I've heard you, I listened to you for the last half hour now, and you've talked about a lot of things, and it's very evident that you came up to the administrative side, because not once have you mentioned the faculty. You've talked about administrators, students, sports, everything, but you've never mentioned the faculty. And that's kind of like an automotive dealership going through and talking about their sales force and their finance department and everything else, but never actually talking about the moneymaker, the one that the customers deal with 99.9% of the time, and that's the service department. The faculty are the people who actually create the finished product that you want. And there's been a lot of controversy around that in the last couple of years. One was the cancellation of the Irish Studies Department. And I'm just wondering, are you going to do things like reduce the number of administrators, reduce the ratio anyway, to get it more in line and put more emphasis on faculty? Because administration is not where you generate good students, graduates. It's in the faculty. And I think it's telling that we haven't heard anything about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I think that is more my oversight than yours, Jeremiah, because we had so much to cover in terms of programs and different things. But let's talk about that. He's got a good point about faculty, because that always seems to come up, especially when there's budget cuts like we had a few years ago. What's kind of your views on the people in the classrooms?
Great. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for that opportunity. I would love to talk about our faculty. The University of Montana faculty is absolutely world-class. They are ultimately, when a University of Montana student leaves this university, the faculty are who they remember. Those are the ones that are adding the value to the experience, and they're at the core of everything we do. So make no mistake about that. You know, we want to be responsive to what our students need from us. We want to be responsive to what the state of Montana needs from us. And we want to be responsive to what our business community needs from us. So we are going to always seek to align our programming. We're going to seek to find efficiencies where we can, to be sure that everything we do is driving toward creating that great educational product. And so, you know, I'm 56 days in. So what that's going to look like and how we're going to do it, I can't give you a detailed plan yet. But I am committed to world-class education, and I want to be as mindful of taxpayer dollars and tuition dollars as we possibly can. I want to spend every dollar in a way that makes people in this state proud. I want to spend every dollar in a way that makes our students more able to go and do what they want to do next. So I appreciate the question, Jeff.
And that's also that's where recruitment is also coming in, because we're kind of at a generational phase where some of these professors, faculty members who are, you know, they're now moving into retirement themselves. And so finding new educators and attracting that kind of faculty, I know, is also a big part of that process, right?
Oh, absolutely. We want the best and brightest to teach at the University of Montana. And we believe that we have everything we need to attract them here. This is an amazing place.
All right. We're going to take, I guess, Yeah, we got a break coming up, so we're going to get to George and see if he's got a question. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'll have Jeremiah Shin here with us for a short time. Our number is 406-721-1290, or if you want to call us statewide, 1-800-568-5309. And we'll be continuing with Talk Back this morning. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian, and we have Jeremiah Shin in with us at the University of Montana. We'll get to George's phone call as we continue this morning with Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network.
Four.
Dennis Bragg with the updated weather. A combination of patchy smoke and sunny skies the next couple of days with highs in the mid to upper 80s. Mornings have been running colder than the forecast, dropping into the 40s, even the low 30s Monday morning. And if that continues, it'll stunt the afternoon heating. We are watching for a push of monsoonal moisture again, especially Wednesday and Thursday afternoon and evening, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Sun should last into Friday, but we are seeing a threat of rain and cooler conditions for the upcoming weekend.
Every weekend, Diane Beck and Becky Peterson, the Beck and Beck team at Windermere Real Estate, present Missoula Real Estate Today on News Talk KGVO. The Beck and Beck team provides years of local experience for your real estate transaction and bring you guests that provide useful information on products and services available in our community on Missoula Real Estate Today. Saturday mornings from 8 till 8:30 and replayed Sunday mornings from 10:30 till 11 on News Talk KGVO, FM 98.3 and AM 1290, and on the free KGVO mobile app.
My doctor said I could use something called a biosimilar. Then she told me what it is.
A biosimilar is a type of biologic medication. Just like brand name drugs have generic versions, original biologics can have biosimilars.
So I asked what the benefits are and if they work the same.
Biosimilars have the same safety, effectiveness, and quality as the original biologic. They also offer more medication options at potentially more competitive prices.
My doctor said I could learn more at fda.gov/biosimilars.
This is Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. I feel like playing this bumper music should fire us up for the coming out of the tunnel on the opening day here coming up on Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. All right, let's get to another call for Jeremiah Shin, UN president. We've got George on the phone. George, how you doing? What's your question this morning?
Hi there. Thanks for having the president of the university on. I've heard about him, but at first I've heard anything from him, and sounds like a nice fella. And I appreciate that. Just one little comment to Jeff there. Just maybe we could be a little more respectful there. You know, guy's brand new in town, and you know how many times we heard the either UM or Bozeman president on the radio that we can have a nice conversation with. Just and I'll try to live up to that myself because you know it's interesting times, and we all get kind of worked up.
Did you have a question at all, George?
Well, you know, I think the faculty issue is completely, new to him because he's brand new in town at the university there. And that has quite a history on it. And I'm trying to formulate a question. Mostly it was just a comment, I guess.
Well, that's fine. I appreciate that, George. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate that. You know, Jeremiah, you also mentioned about faculty, but there's this amazing support staff. You gave a stat the other day that just blew my mind about hamburgers. What was the story there?
Yeah, I was talking about just all of the things that a university does. And one of the things that we do every week is we make 4,000 hamburgers a week and 10,000 slices of pizza.
that's an amazing staff. But it shows that there is this huge component. And this is the overall economic impact of the university.
Absolutely.
Both here, also Bozeman, same situation. You have these just amazing people that all provide all those support services.
Yeah, we are. I mean, the University of Montana is a small city, or actually a not so small city.
Yeah,
we operate parking lots and food service, and we teach cheerleading and forestry, and I mean, there's a lot of things that are happening on a university campus, and they're really dynamic places.
Let's go ahead. We got another call with Francis. Francis, you're on with Jeremiah Shin from UM. What's your question this morning?
Well, you were talking about clear cutting. You were going to teach fire defense with clear cutting. Is that right?
Oh, clear cutting in the forest stuff? No, we didn't really say that specifically.
What I was talking about, thank you for calling, Francis. What I was talking about
and
is in our Lubricht Forest, one of the things that our students understand in our Lubricht Experimental Forest is how to do controlled burns to be sure that they're reducing the likelihood of wildfire. So that, that was one of the things we do in our experimental forest.
Yeah, it's more more of that understory management. So they'll do those prescribed burns, and it removes what they call the ladder fuels, which go up into the trees and cause the torching. So does that answer your question there?
Yes, and I got another one. You probably won't like it, but...
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. Are you letting these college professors teach this woke stuff? You know, equality.
Yeah, all the DEI stuff,
Yeah.
What? Thank you for that
Thanks,
question.
Thanks, Francis. Appreciate your call.
Thanks for that question, Francis, and good morning. At a university, we want to be sure that the University of Montana is welcoming to all viewpoints. We don't want to teach students what to think. We want to provide students with everything that they need to formulate their own opinions and learn how to think on their own. So the last thing we want to do, and it is not our role to teach people what to think. So we want people who can think critically. We want people who understand the world around them. We want people that can contribute to civil discourse out in the community. So that's what we're trying to do at the University of Montana, and we certainly welcome all viewpoints on our campus.
Down to a couple of minutes here. Let's get a question from Kevin on the phone. Kevin, you're on TalkBack.
Yeah, say, I don't mean any due disrespect, but I kind of wanted you to go back to Jeff's question about the administrative issue. You've been here 56 days. You obviously had studied the university prior to even putting an application in. I understand the administration is top-heavy. Are you going to look at the administrative process there and make cutbacks if they are needed? And I believe they are needed.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Good question there. Yeah. Go ahead and reiterate that.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Kevin. We're going to look at everything. I want to be sure that what we're delivering to our students, so in the financial aid office, as they're registering for classes, as they're finding out where to park, I want to be sure that we are delivering all of those services at a high level of quality. So again, we want to maintain quality, but I also want it to be efficient. I don't want to unnecessarily spend tuition dollars or taxpayer dollars. And so everything that we do, we're going to look at. Now, we might arrive at different places in terms of what is needed or what isn't needed, but I'm very conscious of my responsibility to steward the dollars that are entrusted to us by our students and the taxpayers of Montana. And so that's something that I will be mindful of, and that's something that we will continually be on the lookout for. And I'm certain that as we move forward, there will be some things that are different.
We're just about out of time. We got to cut him loose. Dave Koontz is in with us. Dave, we talked about For Montana. How can people get involved in that? And, you know, whether they want to apply or maybe we have, you know, donors, people that want to be involved in that program, how can they do that?
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. You know, if folks want to get involved with that fundraising initiative, visit formontana.org. That way you can make a gift if you're an alum. Any dollar amount matters. And for students out there, especially those who are seniors in high school who are looking and thinking about the University of Montana, we'd love to have you. And the biggest thing there is just go to umt.edu, apply to the university. We'll work with you and get the FAFSA filled out. And from there, we can start applying aid and make you aware of these scholarship opportunities. We have a great scholarship portal that students can look at that can tear down some of those barriers to attending UM. So formontana.org. And then for students, jump online, umt.edu, and apply today.
And I'm thinking, Jeremiah, that we're probably looking at that will be in place for next year, or what's a quick timing on that?
Well, I mean, our goal is over the next several years to offer an opportunity for Montanans to invest in other Montanans. We believe that again, I keep saying Browning brought us Brady Butte. When we invest in some of those students, we're making an investment in Montana. So appreciate being here.
Thank you very much, Jeremiah Shin. We appreciate you taking your time, and good luck with the year. We appreciate your time very much.
Thank you. This is
TalkBack.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. Firefighters trying to get their hands around a couple of new fires in the Bitterroot.
The Nature Grove fire burning on the Scalco Highway has burned about 200 acres and has forced some evacuations. Crews also working on a new fire that was seen west of Lost Trail Pass. Meanwhile, the Sand Creek fire in the West Pioneer is now estimated at more than 33,000 acres. But Operations Section Chief Phil Knob says crews have been successful in securing lines along the southeastern corner of that fire, which is where the blaze had threatened to destroy Maverick Mountain Ski Area, Elkhorn Hot Springs, and homes in the Upper Grasshopper Valley.
Overall, our whole goal of getting this secured is there. So this is a big win for us, getting that tied in and secured now. We'll just keep an eye on that.
The Bobcat Lakes fire to the north of that is now mapped at just over 10,000 acres with 40% containment. The lightning also sparked additional fires in the Flathead, most of those small, although there is one, the Deer Creek fire burning out by Happy's Inn that had already burned nearly 1,000 acres. The Camp Creek fire, which was first spotted Friday burning in the southern Bob Marshall Wilderness, is now covering 6,500 acres. That area has been closed for safety. More numbers confirming Montana drivers are paying a lot more than they usually would approaching Labor Day, with gas prices taking another jump this past week, and we're actually paying the most we've ever paid in August. According to GasBuddy's latest survey of more than 600 stations, regular unleaded across Montana rose more than 9 cents over the past week, averaging $4.41 per gallon. That's more than a dollar higher than this time last year. It's also more than 20 cents a gallon higher than we were paying in 2022 after prices had their record spike earlier that summer. Across the state, prices range from a low of $4.14 to a high of $5.29. Diesel is even more expensive, well over $5, and premium fuel is also north of $5 a gallon. This is the Montana State News Network.
Are you ready to take back Montana's future? Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement to restore Montana's prosperity. We're fighting to cut property taxes, expand school choice, and eliminate job-killing regulations. But we can't do it without you. Join us today. Take action. Knock on doors. Make calls. Influence lawmakers. Be a part of the movement that's putting power back in the hands of Montanans. Sign up now at AmericansForProsperity.org, paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Hi, I'm Attorney General Austin Knutson. When you see emergency lights on the side of the road, slow down and move over. It's dangerous for first responders to help motorists on the side of the road while cars are buzzing by at 80 miles an hour. In Montana, when you see emergency lights on the side of the road, you must slow down and move over, or face a fine or even jail time. It's the law. When you see someone pulled over, slow down and move over. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
This is Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. Dennis Bragg filling in for Nick Christensen. I'm not going to fill in for you. I can't run the phones. Oh, my gosh. Filling in for Peter Christian this morning. Appreciate everybody being here statewide. And I want to thank Jeremiah Shin for coming in. I'm really impressed with his presentation the other day at the State of the University. It's really interesting to hear a president, because like I said, usually they'll come in with spreadsheets and we're going to do this and that. And he was very much about the value added. And, you know, hearing his background, especially from the student perspective, that was really an overarching theme in what he was doing. So
yeah, and it's a reminder to people that it is only 56 some odd days, right? So it's early. Obviously he has his ideas coming in, but I think you guys covered
a great variety of stuff.
Yeah. And then and obviously thanks to Jeff and our other callers for calling in and asking about some of the stuff that we didn't. So I think it was good, and hopefully we didn't scare him off, and he'll come on again here later in the semester. That'd be great.
And I would encourage everybody out there, if you've got comments or questions, or you know, maybe something that you've seen, or an idea even that would make UM perfect. Maybe you're an alum, and maybe you're from MSU, and you've got a great idea. They like to hear those kind of things, so watch for his opportunities. As he'll go out, I'm sure he'll be setting up some listening tours and different things like that, because he's very much about getting to know the state and what we need here in the area.
Yeah, Dave mentioned too, some other people involved in the university will be willing to come on too. So hopefully we can get more guests from the university down the stretch as well.
And we certainly reach out to our friends in Bozeman as well, MSU. We'd love to have, need to make more contacts with you. But if you're down there on that campus and you're working on some great things, I heard about a program here a couple of days ago, I guess it was, where they're reaching out. I don't have the information here in front of me. But what they're doing to do is bring out a program. And I thought this was kind of interesting where they, let me see if I find this in for information. What they're going to do is have a kind of a competition for kids where they can sign up, and then they're going to send out some of their forestry folks. This is from MSU to work with the school kids in helping them design fire resilient communities. And I thought this was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's.
I bet Peter Cole might know about that.
Yeah, MSU we'll have to ask him about it. Let's see, find out where I had it on the news this morning. But yeah, it's basically a program where they're going to offer these kids the opportunity to get in there. And oh, here it is right here. The Science Math Resource Center at MSU, partnering with Smart Fires and the Montana Girls STEM Collaborative. Mm. And they're going to sponsor five middle school teams for the National Future City Competition. The theme is going to be Fire Resilient Future, which after seeing what happened in Spokane, obviously, we're all looking over our shoulder. And what it's going to do is challenge students in grades 6 through 8 to engineer a city set 100 years from now that has already figured out how to prevent, withstand, and recover from wildfires. So this is pretty good. Gets everybody thinking in that thing. They're going to build some scale models. They'll use recycled materials and present their designs at regional competitions coming up during the school year. I think it's in January. And so if you are out there, if you're a selected school or youth organization, you'd like to be involved in this, full registration funding available, travel support, all the supplies you need, and also a coach stipend to help out with that. Applications are due September 7th, and you can go to the Montana State University's Science Math Resource Center and find all that information. All right. Great. I guess we're going to take some open phones right now, right?
Yeah. The rest of the show and no guests are scheduled. So open phones, whatever anyone wants to talk about. I know you want to kind of provide some fire updates too.
We should probably talk fires because it did get kind of interesting here again over the weekend. Very dry. We get the gusty conditions. We had our guest, a rancher that was back on there earlier in the hour, and he was talking about some of the concerns on Sand Creek. Were really the fact that a lot of the producers had just gotten up into that high country with their cattle. And all of a sudden now it's like, boom, get out of there. So, if you got fires in your mind or any of those kind of things, we certainly are open. Give us a call right now. Don't have the numbers here in front of me.
721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
There you go. So give us a call if you got something on your mind, if you want to talk about that, if there's something going on. We heard some earlier concerns about the beef imports coming in from Brazil. I know a lot of ranchers are kind of concerned about that. Our congressional delegation oddly offering some criticism unusually for President Trump there on that, saying they don't think that's a good move for us. So, all right. Looks like we got George back on the phone with us here.
George
all right.
is back.
George, welcome back to Talk Back. What's on your mind?
Oh, okay. So just real quick. I did appreciate hearing the president. That's excellent. And I've been wondering about that. I've been busy, busy summer and whatnot. But anyway, main thing I wanted to say is, we're in some interesting times. I think we will all agree right now. And so, we're all in this together. If you lean left, if you lean right, if you're right in the center, that's the only way we're going to get through is just, have a civil conversations and respectful conversations to get through it. Because, there's so many platforms now where, you can be outrageous and say outrageous things anonymously online. At least it seems that that's what some people are doing. And I like this little forum because it's kind of civilized and we can actually talk through and figure out some solutions to problems, in Montana. And so that was just a follow up on that. Otherwise, I could, talk about a lot of things. We could talk about, I don't know. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I agree with you, George. I mean, that's always been my approach as a reporter. Many is the time people accuse reporters of, you've got this bias one way or the other. A lot of times I'm a blank slate. I roll in and I may think, maybe I've done some research or some reading or those kind of things. And I'll roll in And yeah, I have my own opinions, but a lot of times I find different aspects. Like, well, I did not know that, or I didn't, you know. And to me, that's what you got to do is get out on the street and start talking about different ideas for sure. George, thanks for your call. Appreciate it very much. We'll continue with TalkBack. Open phones right now, right here on the Montana Talks Network.
Congress is making smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
On America's darkest day, 9/11, our nation vowed to never forget. Let's keep that promise through education, remembrance, and honoring America's heroes and the families they leave behind. Head to t2t.org to learn more.
You're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian on this Tuesday morning. Let's go ahead and jump over to the phones right now. And I believe we got Skip on the line from down in the beautiful Bitterroot Valley. Skip, how you doing this morning?
Oh, well, thank you, Dennis. I was I was actually calling in to talk to you, you know, just between you and me.
Uh-oh.
I just wanted you to know.
Well, I got to ask you, what did you think? You were at the Sheep Creek meeting last week down there in Hamilton. What'd you think about the turnout to that? I mean, it was estimated about 600 people showed up from all walks of the Bitterroot to get involved in this.
Well, quite frankly, I was so enthused about it because behind the scenes, I try to do things to make those things as high quality as possible, like a whole other people of a team try to do down here in the Bitterroot. But when I saw you, my fake knee wasn't doing me much good that day, so I went over to the overflow room, and there was only a couple people in there, and it was much more comfortable. And it was fun. I actually ran into an ex-wife while I was sitting over there. It was kind of fun. So,
yeah, that never happens.
And so anyway, why I called was to thank you first, to thank you for giving the appropriate exposure, especially on radio news, and then also I saw and heard the way that you, when you made a presentation on radio, and then I saw KPAX picked up some stuff. It was nice that they could hear the talking points that reflected the views of the people most affected by something like having the Sheep Creek mine, if it ever does come to happen. And it was very well done, in that a lot of the things that that happened there, anything that you put together, I thought it was just right, reflecting exactly what we were in for and we need to learn about.
Well,
and so
thank you, Skip. You humble me, sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, you're the guy that's got your camera. You're like a one-man gang. You got your camera, but you got your little flip book, and you're taking notes like mad. And I just wanted to tell you, it was really cool to see it come together. But I wanted to just point out, in this election cycle, we're coming up on a ballot that I hope people realize that this is the kind of an issue that you want to make sure that people at all levels that you're going to vote for, it's this kind of an issue locally that you, in Western Montana and then certainly here in Ravalli County, you want to make sure that something that important, that these candidates are really understanding how important this is to their constituents that are voting for them. And everything from our U.S. representative to our U.S. senator that we're going to be voting for on this ballot, and then certainly at the commissioner level, I think the commissioner is already a wrap in Ravalli County, but then anybody that's downstream on the Bitterroot River from Ravalli County, as in Missoula County, and then anybody affected in the Clark Fork, this is the kind of situation that is systemic if there's ever a problem. And everybody needs to realize that these people that are going to go to Washington, they better understand situations like this. So when legislation comes up, that they can vote to make sure that we get it right.
I think you got the perfect point there, Skip, that's why we print these big voter guides. That's why we have opportunities to go to candidate nights. And, you know, yep. A lot of times you see these candidates come to your doorstep and you think, I can't be bothered. But that's your opportunity to have that one-on-one conversation. And if it's not the candidate themselves, talk to their people, because they'll take those notes back, and that makes a big difference. So, all right.
I personally met with people like Kurt Olney. I personally met with Seth Bogner, and as an example of people that could be in our Washington delegation. And then I personally met with Aaron Flint at some meetings to make sure that they're aware of the PowerPoints and the real effect on a community. The biggest problem is that the people most affected, closest to this, for instance, this mine, that that are every day living with the amazing gift that we have, which is the Bitterroot River, that it's in such possible jeopardy. We need to understand that this is not in my backyard issue. It's called a NIMBY. This is something that we need to get it right and set a good example for similar situations anywhere. So
Skip,
thank you for letting me vent, and thank you for doing a good job.
We love your participation, Skip. Thank you very much. We'll get back to it. We got calls coming up from Dave and Gary and Jeff. So we'll get to those as Open Phones continues. This is TalkBack on the Montana Talks Network.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
We're doing it the Rocky Mountain way this morning. It's Talk Back on the Montana Talks Network, and we're doing open phones right now, so let's go back to the phones. Dave has been very patient, and let's get him on Talk Back. Dave, what's on your mind this morning?
Yes, I'd like to talk about free market. You know, in my view, when free market is when supply is high and demand is low, prices drop. And then when supply is low and demand is high, prices go up. And that's free market. And so prices are cycling. But when, you know, when it comes to beef, you know, and the farmers are hurting right now, prices are high. Trump bringing in a whole lot of foreign beef seems to me is market manipulation. It's going to hurt the farmers and actually harm their ability to get their supplies back up and prices down naturally. So I don't consider that free market. And I'm just curious what you think about that.
I kind of believe you. And here's the thing that hit me is the timing of this is difficult. Because if you're out there, you're like the ranchers, the producers, they're at that point where they start looking at, okay, how much of that herd do I carry through the winter? What am I setting up for the next year, right? How much feed should I bring in? What are the supplies going to be to get that herd through the winter? And I'm wondering how that's going to affect, you know, if I'm running that ranch near Dillon or I'm out there in, you know, Lewistown somewhere and I've got a big spread, how do I, you know, deal with this? Is it a big hit on the market? Is it going to continue next year? It seems to me, and I'm not very learned in those areas, but it seems to me like that would be a kind of a crunch for them.
Yeah, you know, and then not even talking about fuel prices. It seems like the wrong thing to do. You should, high prices will help the farmers recover, but it appears as though Trump has decided that it's better to get prices down for election cycles, and sort of screw the farmers in my mind.
That's a good point, Dave. Thanks for calling. I was actually thinking, Nick, the other day I was in the grocery store and I was seeing the prices. I've been thinking maybe it's time to go back to the farm to market sort of model. Yeah. Like we have that with that that ranch out there in Miller Creek. You know, they have that great little place. You can buy it straight. I'm thinking maybe I got to cut out the middleman here.
Might be cheaper.
Who knows? All right. Gary's on the phone with Open Line. Gary, you're on TalkBack. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate being able to express our opinion. I listen to your show, and we have a lot of older people calling in, criticizing Donald Trump. I believe that how are they going to vote when it comes to the midterm election? What I'm saying is that they forget about Joe Biden and all the immigrants he brought in here that Trump's inherited. But if every one of you was in Donald's shoes, Trump, you can always sit on the sidelines and criticize. But are you going to go back to vote Democrats and allow every immigrant to be placed in your home, rape your daughter? So I would appreciate people trying to give Donald Trump some credit. Now, he's not perfect, but he sure done a lot for us. If you look at the big, beautiful bill, reducing Social Security, no tax on that. I benefited by $2,000 on that. So you gentlemen out there, if you want to criticize, then you better step up the plate and have some idea what you're going to do. You can't even believe what he goes through every day. He almost got lost his life 3 times, 4 times. He doesn't take salary. So stop criticizing and get involved. If you want Democrats back in power, they will bring in more and more of your life. So thank you for expressing my opinion.
That's a good opinion, Gary. We appreciate it. We always appreciate those veteran voters, too, who have survived more than a few elections. Always some stories to tell there. Jeff's on the phone with us now on TalkBack. Jeff, what's up?
Hey, good morning again. First of all, I want to say I did appreciate Dr. Shin coming on. I don't know that Seth Bodner came on at all. He might have come on once at the very beginning, but most of the time it's staff like Dr. Kia and folks like that we hear from. And so I hope it's a continuing presence.
We hope to do that, Jeff. Yeah, we hope to do that because you really have to hear these, you know, and to be fair, what's the pandemic threw a lot of this, and I don't always like to use that as an excuse, but it did make it difficult. I know during the pandemic, when I was over at KPAX, I was able to visit with President Bodner on a regular basis. But then coming out of that, there's been kind of a disconnect just generally. It's hard sometimes, not just with UM, but with cities, counties. It's hard to get a hold of folks. So I'm glad we were able to get him in here, and we'll try to make that happen again.
Yeah. I just want to say that since the show went statewide, I've been calling on Talk Back for 10 years. So there's a lot of people who don't know me or my background. Just very, very briefly, I was a draft dodger who went into the Air Force to stay out of the Army and ended up staying 28 years in the Air Force.
Oh, no, so that's a story.
I have an appreciation. I was enlisted the whole time. I have an appreciation for the non-commissioned officer corps, and it kind of forms my whole view of business and corporations and organizations and structures. And the non-commissioned officer, the NCO, is the backbone of the military. It's acknowledged worldwide. It's one of the reasons why the Russians are having problems, why a lot of countries in the Middle East have problems. And that was my mindset going into this. And in my mind, at the University of Montana, the faculty is a non-commissioned officer corps of the university. Yes, they have degrees and stuff, but they're the ones who actually do the mission. They're not support staff. They are at the pointy end of the sword, and they're the ones engaging the students and putting, teaching them how to think, hopefully, and not just what to think. And to listen for a half an hour and not hear any mention of a faculty really made me suspect of where the emphasis is, particularly since Dr. Shin said he grew up as an administrator and not faculty.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's disrespectful at all.
I certainly didn't take it that way, Jeff. And I think, like I say, I fall on my own sword for that because we had so many other topics to cover that I should have got back to that. So thank you so much. No, I think you had a great question and a great call there.
I just want people to understand it's not impolite to press people if they're in a position like Dr. Shin. Well, how are you going to handle this? Because it's a nationwide problem, administrative bloat. So I just wanted to hear his answer. I don't think I did it disrespectfully or anything.
I didn't take it that way, Jeff. We appreciate your input. Thanks for the call. All right, that's Jeff calling back on TalkBack. We always appreciate those viewpoints. It's very important. So I got a few minutes left on TalkBack. If you got something you want to share, give us a call on our lines, and we'll be continuing right here on the Montana Talks Network.
Just cream.
Montana Talks Network with TalkBack. Dennis Bragg filling in for Peter Christian for a few more minutes. Open phones if you got something you want to share with us. Got a few minutes left. 1-800-568-5309 or 406-721-1290 if you're in the Missoula area. Nick, I want to talk about Bears for a minute. I don't want to get too far down the thing, but there is something that they do up at Kalispell at the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And I think it's a great service. They actually have these fruit collection situations that they put on. And the idea is that if you take a look at bears in particular, they are attracted to fruit like there's no tomorrow. And I think I've told this story before, but I remember a few years ago, we had there was a mama and two yearling cubs that were running all over around central Missoula looking for food. This is probably, it was after school started. Mm. And a couple of them got treed in the same tree. Just behind Sentinel High School.
I remember this.
Yeah, and so they had to bring over the trank gun and, you know, the FWP, and it was a big deal. Well, as I was getting footage of that, I remember going around back in the alley, and I thought, man, I could really smell apples here. And here was this big old pile of apples that had just fallen off the tree in the alley. And I'm going, okay, now we know why there's bears. So just a reminder to folks that if you're out there and you've got the fruit trees, could be apples, could be whatever, but as these bears enter what they call hyperphagia, this period where they just got to pile on the calories, right? And it's kind of like us right before we go on a diet. It's that same same kind of
cheat
approach. Cheat day, right? But it draws the bears straight into neighborhoods. And, of course, the flathead, big concern, because usually those are grizzlies. So FWP is running a fruit drive from September 8th through the 11th. You can drop off your unwanted fruit at the FWP office there on North Meridian Road in Kalispell during work hours between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. And then what they do is they take all that donated fruit. They don't just send it to the landfill. They go ahead and give it to bears, but they do it the right way. It's down to the Grizzly and Wolf Discovery Center down there in West Yellowstone. But just a reminder that if you're out there and you've got some kind of fruit, that sort of thing, by all means, clean it up. The bears are coming in hot right now because we didn't have a very good berry crop. And so the bears are really popping up there. FWP all over the state and the different communities seeing a lot of bear activity. As the bears try to pile on these calories, they'll come looking for anything. The other thing is make sure you don't have, you know, the pet food out. A lot of people, you have the dog dish out there. They love that. Chicken feed, bird feeders.
Bird feeders
are really a bad.
And so common, right?
Yeah, very much so. So if you, you know, if you get that hummingbird feeder that you forgot out there, or the little bird, the birds are doing fine right now. Don't let it be a bear attractant.
Is there, you might not know the answer, but I'm just thinking about it. Is there fruit trees that are more, you know, enticing than others to bears? Like if you have this certain type of fruit tree that maybe
I would
think extra cautious.
From what I've been told, it's any of the softer fruits, so apples in particular, because they can last for a long time once they hit the ground. I mean, they can be there for weeks, and there's so many of them, but they're very aromatic. Now, we don't have peach trees, but I'm sure peach and apricot and all those would also be kind of in that same category. And fortunately, we don't have grapefruit. I don't know what that would be. I think especially your apple trees, those kind of fruit trees, just make sure you clean up and keep that fruit off the ground because they'll come in.
We only have a few minutes left. Did you want to talk about gas prices? There are some kind of staggering numbers.
We should mention that because both you and I, we looked at the latest numbers. AAA does their numbers at the end of the week, and they had kind of implied that they'd seen about a dime. And then Gas Buddy said, it was just under a dime for them, right?
Yeah. And the biggest concern, or at least the number that stood out to me, they said that gas isn't, it's not at all-time records, but it is the highest level ever recorded this late in the calendar year. But they said Americans could, for the first time ever, see a national average price of gas above $4 per gallon on Labor Day. The previous record was, I think you said, $3.83 set in 2012. And it was funny, I noticed a comment when I did the article yesterday, and someone put on Facebook, like, it was $5 last year, and someone jumped on and like, yeah, they said the national average. So, yeah. And that's a concern, too, in Montana. Our average is 441 now. It just keeps climbing. And the national average is only 405. So I can't really remember a time from when I was covering gas prices in the last 5+ years where we were paying that much more than the national average.
Well, the thing that caught my attention, I went back and looked at this too, because AAA does a good job of tracking that. And we all remember 2022 was just that big, impactful year. You had a bunch of stuff. You had the Russian, you know, the Ukrainian war had hit supplies. There was just that post-pandemic travel spike. And that's the year we were paying pretty close. I think it was, I don't remember what the high was. I think it was about $5, pretty close to it.
Yeah, Peter took a picture of it when it was $5 just down the street. Yeah.
But that year in 2022, at this point in the end of August, we're 20 cents higher than the price was then. We had dropped down, but we're paying 20 cents more a gallon than we did at this point in 2022. So we're just not seeing that drop in prices. And I'll be real curious to see what happens. I mean, usually the refineries have caught up, demand falls off. I'm kind of struggling because I have to put, you know, premium. And, you know, I insist on having these Subarus with turbos and you got to put the premium. I'm well over $5. So I tell you, my travel is this time of the year and I like to get out and have some fun. Not so much this year.
Yeah.
Not at all. I have to save up. What's on the show tomorrow?
Yeah. Tomorrow, Bob Satterschwartz will be back. I know he was just on Monday, but this is kind of how the scheduling worked. He'll be Montana World Affairs Council. He'll be speaking with author, historian Peter Stark. I don't know how far our statewide audience has heard Peter Stark yet, but yeah, he's authored
guest.
A handful of books, several articles. He's an adventurer. So we're going to talk about the Whiskey Rebellion Act from 1791.
Which is a great point in history. Yeah. People don't realize they talk about tariffs and taxes and stuff like that. And they don't realize a lot of that philosophy was tried and sometimes worked back in the day for sure. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Thanks again to Jeremiah Shinn, UM president. And thank you for your calls and for your continued support of TalkBack right here on the Montana Talks Network.